the whole motto is connecting good hearts to good causes. And so that's what she does. You want to come down, you want to, you know, we understand you want to come down and drink rum and bun weed, that's great. But if you want to give back a little bit during that time, you can do that as well. So it's a really beautiful thing that she's doing. So I am an 876 volunteer ambassador. So I'm just out there spreading the word. And then so my focus obviously is the environment, beach cleanups, doing that kind of stuff.
It's episode 83 of Dive in the Podcast with special guests Leanne and David Lee of Lady Godiva. Dive in the Podcast is a weekly all about diving podcast for everyone. Whether you explore the oceans as a snorkeler, scuba diver, free diver, or tech diver, Dive In has something for you. The show is filled with diving news, feature interviews with guests from around the world, interesting dive topics, and ocean advocacy. Visit diveinpod.com to find out more about the show, past guests, and our Patreon.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nick.
Hi, everybody. I'm Justin.
I'm Amit, and we'll be chatting boat entries on Sidemount.
I'm April, and we're the hosts of Dive in the Podcast.
Before we get started today, we'd like to thank you, the listeners. Thanks for tuning in every week. Your support encourages us to keep going and make a bigger and better podcast. What did everybody think about last week's episode with Darcy Kieran?
I thought it was a very fun and interesting episode, and it has actually sparked a lot of conversations at the shop in the past week.
Oh, really? Wow.
That's cool. Like with my friends and dive buddies, and it was a very interesting episode for me. But I mean, it was kind of right up my alley of, like, you know, business and diving. So, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I got to say, I quite enjoyed it too. And I'm like, you know, I like the idea that he's starting to put some serious research into this, like, diving, scubanomics, as it were, and trying to show us like what our possibilities and how to maybe think about what we should be doing in future. So yeah, quite enjoyed that as well. And he, you know, it's finally like it's a scientific approach to something that we don't necessarily apply a scientific approach to a lot of times. So I thought it was pretty cool episode.
Yeah, it's definitely neat. One thing I didn't really get to talk to him about that kind of thought of later is the fact that, you know, one of the things he complained about was a lack of available data. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we group all of our dive shops, landlocked dive shops, ocean adjacent dive shops that do daily tours, you know, those are all in the same bucket of information. Mm-hmm. So, and I really wish there was a way to get more information from more dive shops so you could kind of get some information to compare some, you know, apples for apples, more than fruit for fruit, if you know what I mean.
I see what you're saying.
I think, though, too, like, social media is such a great tool for that because on Instagram, I've connected with so many young people, like, all around the world. I mean, not, like, across Canada and in other countries. And, like, it's interesting to talk to them and kind of see. I mean, I mainly connect with people who are my own age, which is also kind of interesting. It's social media, of course, good tool.
Definitely cool, and knowledge is power. So we just got to get out there and share our knowledge between each other, because it was only going to increase the buoyancy of the dive shops.
Oh wow, he went there. He totally went. Nice.
Wow,
total dad joke, Justin. I like it.
I do what I can. All right.
I think we could talk about Darcy's interview for a whole nother
interview
episode season. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Tonight, we're speaking to Leanne and David Lee. They're members of the truly family-owned dive shop, Lady Godiva, based in Port Antonio, Jamaica. Leanne is a passionate ocean advocate and host of the YouTube vlog Salty Rum Diaries. She's also a paddy dive master at Lady Godiva. David Lee is a multiple world record holding freediver, underwater photographer, and videographer who uses his skills to showcase the beauty of Jamaica above and below the surface. Welcome to the podcast, Leanne and David. Thanks for joining us. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Doing good. And thank you guys for having us both. This is awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for accommodating us. Very cool.
Absolutely. Happy to have you folks on. And we'll actually start your official interview in a couple of minutes here. But before we do that, dive with any seals ever? No?
Not one.
No, we're not any seals at all. I guess we'll have to come visit you guys in the cold water for that.
Yeah. Well, the reason I asked that is because this week, another Nova Scotia local story caught my eye in the news. In December of 2017, the Department of Fisheries and Oceans biologist Damien Lydgard attached a camera to the back of a gray seal off the coast of Nova Scotia at Sable Island, expecting to recover it soon thereafter. After 4 weeks of daily searching, he assumed it was lost. Then, after 3.5 years, the $10,000 camera was found. The camera was returned to the company that actually made it in Australia. Mm-hmm. And they downloaded the footage and tracked down where it belonged and actually sent it back to Damien. And now he's been able to use that to do the original research he was looking to do 3.5 years ago, which is learn more about the seals and what they're doing, you know, where they're what specifically they're eating off of Sable Island and what they're doing, how deep they're going, all that kind of stuff. For instance, did any of you know that seals apparently like to take naps at 150 meters underwater for around 15 or so minutes. I thought that was kind of wild.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's that free diving zen thing there.
Yeah.
If I was a seal, it'd be a pretty safe place to take a nap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's wild. It sounds super nice. I think I could take some sweet naps at 150 meters. And yeah, there's more details in the articles linked in the show notes. Be sure to check that out. That is it for the news today. It's time to dive in with Leanne and David. We'll start off with where are you both from?
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm from right here in Port Antonio in Jamaica. Port Antonio, Portland. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Yeah. Born and raised.
And same for me as well. We're both from the same little town in Port Antonio, Jamaica.
Awesome. And do you guys have any first, I mean, I always imagine, you know, people from Caribbean islands have early memories of the water, but do you have any memories that stick out as like some key ocean memories in your youth or in your childhood?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, my mother's she's been diving since the early 70s before I was born. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, when I was a little kid, like 3-4 years old, she would go out in a little rubber dinghy and just sort of exploring, and then she'd take friends. And one of my biggest memories is when she came back on the boat. I don't know why. I just, you know, I put on her booties. And I remember once I put on her booties and strapped on a weight belt and just jumped in the water. You know, you can imagine what this is going to do to a 4-year-old. Luckily, it was in like, I don't know, maybe like 6-8 foot of water. And I just remember standing on the bottom. I was like, oh, man, what am I going to do now? And then I remember the boat captain just reaching down and grabbing me and lifting me out of the water. So that's one of my biggest memories. In the very beginning around diving.
Wow.
And then there's just so many, because that has really been my life. I mean, I did my first dive. I know we're probably not supposed to say this, but I was 4 years old. My mom back in the 70s, you know, there's not a lot of regulation and that kind of thing. So I would just basically, you know, throw the octopus in my mouth and I hang on to the tank, and mom just kind of swims around, you follow her around. So those are the fond memories. There's some not so good ones as well, but anyways, we'll leave it at the fun stuff.
My memories would be, I mean, I didn't jump off the side of a boat with a weight belt on me, but, you know, my earliest memory with diving was very similar to that, where Jan would just, she'd be on, you know, taking on a dive, maybe really shallow 20-foot dive, and then I would just swim down from the boat and, you know, pull on our octo and swim beside her for the dive. And you're right, that stuff was, I think about it now and it's like, oh my God, you guys are crazy, but that was totally normal for us to do that back then. And we actually had a moment like that recently with David's son. She was just coming up from a dive. We're probably about 15 feet. And I saw Alex, you know, swim down, grab her octo, and it was just full circle moment for us, you know, watching him go down there. So, one of our earliest.
That's got to be awesome.
And Leanne, how did you become interested in diving? What was it, kind of that memory of breathing off the octo, or what was it that got you interested?
We didn't have a choice. We had to dive in this family. Jan, she's obviously the water person. She started diving for food, really. She was a spearfisher woman. So diving was always in our family, David before me. And I guess, you know, she was the first female dive operator in Jamaica. And I think I think she's still the same one. I think she's still the only one, as far as I know. And I suppose just growing up with her, she was always just the biggest role model. You know, it wasn't something that I had planned necessarily, and I went away to school and all of that. But I think there was just always something that said, you're going to end up back in Jamaica. You know, you're going to dive again. This is what you're going to do. You know, go off and play and have fun. But yeah, that was like I said, it was a rite of passage in our family, where if you're going to be in it, everybody's going to know how to dive, snorkel, whatever it is, you're going to be in the water. So whether we liked it or not, we're diving.
Yeah.
I like it. Now, I got to ask you a follow-up question, because, I probably say this too much on the show, but I do get like that sense of homesickness when I talk to Caribbean people. But being a Caribbean kid, I got to say, the idea of a woman owning a dive shop, number one, at that time, would have probably been something that was just like so outside of the norm for the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, a woman taking a leadership role in a sport like diving that would have been perceived as potentially this dangerous, crazy sport in a largely patriarchal society. That must have been quite the trailblazing kind of a person to actually go ahead and do that. So tell us a little bit about Jan.
Jan... I'm sure David will get back on and fill in a couple parts of this, but she, you know, she was a single mom and she raised David. Like I said, she was a spearfisher woman. So that's how she would put food on the table. And after a time, I forgot the name of the guy, but he encouraged her to, you know, teach diving instead of just going out and, you know, putting food on the table with fish, you know, selling fish. And And even before that, she is such a renegade. How she even started diving, she went to Florida. She bought all her gear. I mean, I don't even think this thing had, I don't even know if it had a depth gauge. I mean, this stuff was so rudimentary back then. It was incredible. And she didn't have any clue how to dive. And she got that. She went back down to Jamaica. And that's how she started, you know, diving, spearfishing, free diving, spearfishing, that kind of stuff. And then, like I said, there was a guy, and anyway, maybe David will remember who it was, but he encouraged her to start teaching. And she bought, I think, 3 tanks. she had 2 sets of gear, and it was really just a very basic setup. She eventually got a little small compressor where she could fill her tanks. And that was her. That is how Lady Godiva started. Just this tiny hole in the wall dive shop, one woman show. So it was pretty incredible.
So, you know, my mom, I mean, you say she must have been, I mean, she still is really, because she's been my role model. She raised me as a single mom. And of course, you know, you have family support and that kind of thing, but my dad wasn't really around. And she's always been there, you know, sort of been both mom and dad for me. And you're right. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, back in the 80s, early 80s, for a female to be starting a dive business and then just blazing the trail for that kind of thing is pretty much unheard of. So she's definitely pioneered this sport since the early 70s.
Mm. Very cool. You know, what I think about that, it sounds as well like she's obviously inspired both of you, shaped kind of like who you are and your interest in diving. Coming from that background, is there any particular style of diving that that is of interest specifically to both of you?
I'm pretty much a basic scuba diver. I mean, I just recently got like enriched air certification. I would love to go further, do tech diving, all of that stuff. It's just not obviously available here in Jamaica right now. But scuba was always my thing. And a long time ago, when David was taking up free diving, and you guys probably already know he's like world record holder free diver back then, I thought he was out of his mind. It's like, what are you doing, man? This sport is so dangerous, you know, all the thing. I thought he was just insane, and he's doing all these records, and I was just hoping and praying he would stop. And then eventually he did. And it wasn't until about 2 years ago, I was doing this job. And you would think David would be the one to inspire me to get into it. But no, it was this crew that I was working with, and they were free diving. And it was like, why am I not doing this? So I started free diving, and thankfully I can go over to my cousin here, David, and he's been able to coach me and train me. And now free diving has become, it's on the same level with diving for me now, for scuba diving. So that's my next love.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, as far as my side, you know, I mean, I've only been exposed to just regular compressed air. Of course, now, you know, I mean, the dive center just started offering Nitrox, so I haven't even done the test or anything yet. I was like, I don't need to do the test. My mom owns a dive center. It's all right. No, I'm kidding. Anyways, but so, yeah, I mean, I've done a whole lot of freediving and a lot of scuba since a very, very young age. And scuba, it was one of those things where it was really fun. And then when I was in high school, I started diving for the dive center. I made my way up to dive master through ACUC, and then I think the last I did through Patty was like rescue or something like that. And I mean, I really don't have any aspirations to go further with those things at this point, because I'm just trying to get, you know, explore the photography side of it and the videography side. And then of course there's the free diving side of it as well, which is a huge part, because that really pretty much helped define who I was since I was in my early 20s. And I mean, just diving in general for scuba and free diving is a huge part of my life.
David, you do a lot of underwater photo and video. Question I had for you is whether the diving or the media came first. But I'm assuming the diving came first for you.
Well, the diving definitely came first, because I never really got interested in videography until I would say maybe early teens, just because I was surfing. And then, you know, there was no way to really have, there was no GoPro, right? So you're trying to stick every kind of camera inside either some Ziploc bag or making some kind of housing or something like that. So definitely the diving first, but then they pretty much complemented each other. When I went off, I went to university in the States, and then I took a photography course there. So I got a little bit better at it. And then I've always pretty much had this constant in my life for media creation, both video and photos. Mm. But then when I moved back to Jamaica in 2006, I started to push more with the photo and the video work, but not so much on diving. I would say it's only within the last 4 years, 4.5 years, that I really started to push more photo and video work underwater. And I think I found my path, because, man, I love it so much. I can't get enough of it at this point. I will go and do some jobs sometime, and I come back and I was like, I can't believe people are paying me for this. This is crazy. This is so much fun. I just went and had a blast, and I just walked away with money. This is amazing, right? Yeah. So it's really, really cool.
And where did your passion for creating media come from? How did you start?
You know, it pretty much started when I started surfing in my early teens. And then I basically wanted to capture myself surfing, because there was nobody doing that. You know, sort of the whole selfie GoPro type of thing, but there was nothing there. So I would actually drag Leanne along with me and sit her on the beach with the tripod and have her film at first. Then you start bringing these clunky old cameras wrapped up in plastic and tape and, you know, duct tape around the nose of the board. That was the first GoPro. So that's really where it started, and it just sort of evolved from there, right? I've done everything from landscape, real estate, playing around with underwater in the early days, not so much portrait stuff. And then, you know, of course, now with the advent of everything digital and, you know, the way that software and the cameras are going, everything has gotten so amazing and produced such amazing images. I don't know how to explain it. It's just one of those things. And I know Nick is also a photographer, and he could probably relate to this, but yeah, I don't know. Every day I wake up, I'm like, man, I want to go shoot something, right? And of course, Leanne is excited. She's like, content! It'll get content, right? So, anyways, yes. So I started really early from surfing, and then it went into everything. I mean, exploring everything.
Yeah, and I got to say, it's been wonderful having David around for my, like I said, I'll wake up in the morning, look at the sea, and I got a great view of it. And I'm like, Dave, I'm like texting him going, Dave, it's a content day, bro. Get your cameras ready. Let's go.
Yeah, it never hurts to have a professional photographer on hand with.
Yeah, it's been a blessing.
Yeah,
it certainly paid off for me. I have Nick around on occasion, and I've never seen a picture of myself until we started diving together, and I was like, oh, You can make me look like I kind of know what I'm doing. Like, this is not bad.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can totally relate to the photo side. The other thing I can relate to you with is the freediving stuff. So you've got some world records in freediving. Mm-hmm. Like, tell me about that.
So this started really when I was between, say, 17, 18, 19, I was helping my mom a lot in the dive center, just taking groups out and that kind of thing. And, you know, when, mm-hmm. when you're working in a commercial setting, it sort of ruins the passion. And I just got tired of hauling scuba tanks around, man. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go out and freedive. And then I started to go out with the dives, but just with my freediving gear. And, you know, whenever the divers were down, I would go down. And I realized I was going pretty deep. You know, I mean, divers are at 80 feet. I was still going to get 80 feet. And then somebody said, oh, you know, we have this amazing freediver from Hawaii and blah, 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 blah. So he came and freedove with him, and it just kind of escalated from there. Then I moved to the States for university. And while I was there, I started to do more research because, well, the internet came out, right? This was in the 90s. And that's when you're would dial up and all this kind of stuff. And I ended up learning that, okay, well, freediving, you can actually kill yourself. You can die, right? If you don't know what you're doing. So I started to look for a trainer. A friend of mine ended up going to Turkey at some point to film a freediving world record, which was one of those no limits dives where the person rides all the way to the bottom on the sled. And he came back and he was so excited because I used to freedive with him as well. And then he says, oh my God, this is so amazing. I'm going to introduce you to the trainer. So he sort of talked me up as I was goal because I was, you know, to the trainer. And then I ended up meeting the trainer. Of course, he wanted he wanted money. I didn't have any money. I was in college. So I had skills. It's like IT skills. I said, okay, well, your website sucks for this freediving organization. I didn't say it like that, but I said, I can build you a nice website and I will trade you for training. And then he just flat out told me, now that he's a good friend of mine, I realize that he was trying to get rid of me. But he basically says, okay, well, I'm not going to train you unless you go for a record. And because he was mainly training, you know, he ended up training Tanya Streeter, Alejandro Robelo, which is a Cuban guy. Last trainee that he worked with was Yasmin Dalkalish, which is a Turkish freediving world champion and was my training partner for a while. And so he started sending me this training in exchange for me building their website. And he kept sending me pretty difficult stuff, but I would return all these good results. And now that I know him really well, he says, yes, I was just giving you really hard stuff, trying to get rid of you, but you kept returning really good results. So he says, okay, well, after about 4 months of training, he says, okay, well, let's try this unassisted freediving record. I was like, okay, well, what is that? Okay, well, it's where you're basically swimming down, no fins, anything. And at the time, the record was, a 40 meters. So he says, okay, well, let's go ahead and we'll do 45 meters. And it just sort of went from there. We did the first official unassisted freediving record in 2001 to 45 meters. And we did one to 47. We did 45, 47, 51, 63, and then 65. And then I pretty much hung up my, no fins. I wasn't wearing anything. Hung up my nose clip after that. But yeah, it was a pretty wild ride. So it was like 5 years of extensive training. But, you know, I learned so much. And now, you know, I've made so much good friends just through freediving all over the world. And right now we still teach courses here. So
yeah,
it's definitely still a big constant in my life. And it does help with the photography and videography stuff as well.
So unassisted constant ballast, what would that be now? Would that be no fins?
Correct. So okay. AIDA has that as constant no fins. That's what they call it now. When I was doing the records, this was before AIDA was even certifying those records. And it was under freediving regulations and education entity. And they had called it unassisted constant ballast. That was my life for 5 years.
Well, I mean, David, that's pretty awesome. I actually just quickly did a more in-depth Google search and I realized you have a deeperblue.com profile there.
Yeah, that was from way, way back then. Actually, awesome. You know Stefan Whelan, right? So I met Stefan back in, what was it? I guess 2002, somewhere around there. And he actually, I guess this was when Deeper Blue was actually starting out, and you know, internet was just getting big, and we developed a website. We were actually doing edits of the videos and uploading them in WMV file, if anybody remembers what that is. And we had up this website, and you know, I mean, so many people actually logged on. It actually crashed the servers and all kinds of stuff. But it was pretty interesting because you know you're getting to see folks were getting to see freediving for the first time remotely like that. Mm-hmm. It was pretty neat.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Leanne, I mean, it's obvious you have a strong passion for diving in the water. And I know obviously you grew up in this family and Jan being a mentor and all that, but is there something else that kind of keeps you connected to that passion?
You know, growing up and seeing what's going on in the water, you know, what I always wanted to see is, when Jan talks about the ocean back when she was a kid, when she was growing up, and hearing what it sounded like the most magical place. It was like the Little Mermaid. It's just fish everywhere. And seeing it now it's very overfished. I don't know. I mean, you're from the Caribbean. I don't know which Caribbean island you said you're from, but if it's anything like Jamaica. All right. Cool. Cool. But you see that, yeah, doubles, right?
Yeah, now you're talking my language, man.
Yeah, now we're going to get into stuff here. Let's talk about food. But, you know, after hearing the comparison, it has to be conservation. And it wasn't something that I knew was happening. This is something that's just starting to develop. And I would say with the dive shop, you know, we recently partnered with the Alligator Head Foundation. And they do a lot of conservation work. And I mean, I'm just a humble diver, right? Like, I don't have a science background or anything, but how can I get involved? How can we change, like, the perspective of what's going on in Jamaica? And how can we get people more connected to the water? And I think that's just kind of the direction that I'm slowly going towards, you know, that way. And the foundation has been great. I love working with them. They do, like I said, a lot of conservation stuff, you know, turtle monitoring, mangrove planting, coral gardening, all of that really, really amazing stuff. So it's been very awesome working with them and learning from their team as well. And so, yeah, I would say conservation and awareness is what I can see myself moving towards. And that's how else I'm staying connected and grounded.
Does free diving tie into conservation and awareness for you as well?
I suppose it can, of course.
Yeah.
you know, something that I've realized is I was never like big on the social media stuff. You know, it was just kind of there to keep in touch. But I'm realizing more and more how much you can use that platform to showcase what you're doing and how to get your message out there. Yeah. And I use it for that. I use it for the tool that it is. You know, I'm not on there to try and get my likes or whatever. It's just, how can I push this out to people? And with free diving and the images that I can get from David, you know, I've gotten messages from women, from Kit, from people said, man, I didn't know we could do this here. And it's so inspiring to see, you know, a woman of your color doing stuff like this. And it's so, yeah, you can definitely get your message out there and create awareness using these little platforms out. Because, I mean, think about what David started. Like he said, there was nothing like this. You know, there was no social media. And I really appreciate it for that you, anybody who has an account can use that for good. So, yeah, I'm using the free diving and pushing out images, content. I recently started editing, and I'm going to put that in quotation. I'm very, very new. I'm always asking David, how do you do this? What is this? This is stupid. And anyway, so I started making my own little videos because I was just piled up with all these little GoPro clips. And it's been great. It's a great learning experience for me. And just to showcase what I'm seeing every day. And I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself, but I really think all of this happened in a very organic way and how everything's come together, because this has led to the project that David and I just kicked off, the Jamaica Below the Surface. And we think it's really important to highlight what Jamaica looks like right now, because at the same time, Jamaica is never seen underwater, right? Like, if you think about places to go diving, you know, you're going to think of Turks and the Bahamas and, you know, maybe Bonaire, all these really beautiful places, Cayman.
Yeah.
But where does Jamaica lie on that scale? Nowhere. Nowhere. Mm. We're seen for our beaches, our mountains, our coffee, our weed, you know, all of those great things. Why has Jamaica never been showcased underwater? Why we never went the way of conservation ever? Mm. And recently now you're seeing all these sanctuaries, they're being developed because they're going into this holy crap moment. We really need to start fixing what's going on in the water. And so this project really, for many reasons, that's just one of the reasons why we launched this. Mm-hmm. But I would say that is one of the main reasons for me, is to highlight diving in Jamaica, to show what Jamaica looks like right now so people can get a good idea. Like I said, I wish I could have seen what it looked like when Jan was in her 20s, you know, when she was a kid, because she used to tell me there's fish out there right now when she was a kid that you don't see anymore here. They're just gone.
Right.
And I'd like to show people what it is now, and then 10 years from now, if we're worse or if we're better. So, yeah, man. So that's the project David and I kicked off.
So we're definitely circling back to the to that project here a little bit more, but yeah, that's a beautiful way to use that power of the social media for good and to show that change. That's cool.
So we've all heard some really good things about Lady G's Dive Shop, and we've heard them from our past guests, Janelle and Jadon.
Yeah.
How would you guys describe the dive shop to a potential customer or guest who would come and visit you guys?
Well, we are very much a mom and pop operation, and now niece, really. But yeah, we're a small operation, so you're going to get personal diving experience. When you're diving with us, you are literally diving with family. And it's not, it's very often that you leave there calling Jan, Auntie Jan, and we'll probably invite you up to have dinner at our house. So when you come and dive with us, it becomes, and David knows this is true. So very often, you know, when you come here, it becomes more of a family cultural experience, because if you're cool, we like you, you're going to be adopted into the family. And that's just one of the things. And it's, you know, you're going to get the opportunity to dive with a family of divers, people who have history with this town, with this area. And it's like I said, it's just going to be a personal experience on top of seeing beautiful reef. By the way, our reef is still, you know, mostly intact. It's great.
Yeah.
It's just our fish life is down. But
where does the name Lady Godiva come from? Yeah.
A friend of Jan's, he came up with it. He thought it was just catchy, right? It comes from Lady Godiva, the lady that was riding on the horse. And so it was just a play on that. David, do you remember who named it?
No, I can't, but I just remember where they're like, yeah, it's not going to be a lady riding on a horse. It's going to be a lady riding a seahorse, right? mermaid riding a seahorse. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. So, that sort of happened.
Yes, now that clicks. I see the logo, and I'm like, oh, yes, that makes so much sense. That's great. That's awesome.
And she's actually wearing a bra now. She wasn't before. We made it family friendly.
Right. 70s logo.
Right.
She had some side boob going on there.
Nothing wrong with side boob.
So you guys were telling us about Jan earlier and her progression buying some gear to starting the shop and her strong influence as a role model. It takes more than luck, though, to have a successful business. So are you able to tell us about her journey from then to now and what has led her to becoming such a successful business owner?
Something that really grew organically, and it has a lot to do with my mom's personality, because she really treats everybody like family. I mean, even new people who come over and meet her and go diving, they'll come back and it's like, oh my God, your mother's so amazing. I wish she was my mother, right? So that's really what happened. So as she progressed through, you know, just having a couple bits of gear, I remember her, you know, just upgrading slowly. So it was something that was very organic. You know, there was no like investors and huge businesses growing. It was just very, very organic. Okay, well, this month we're going to have two tanks. Next month we're going to have three tanks. And, you know, you keep growing in that way. And then it went from, okay, well, we're just going on a fisherman's boat. Okay, we're going to buy a little rubber dinghy. Then after the rubber dinghy, then we're going to go and buy a proper hull and put an engine on it. Yeah. And we get a captain. And it just really grew completely organically. And, yeah, just really word of mouth. So it, a lot of it happened, like I said, is all because of her personality and her passion for what she's doing. And it's just weird. I mean, my mom, she's... How old's my mom now? She's 65?
Seven?
Four? I don't know. She's somewhere in there, right? But she's still out. She, as much as she can go diving, she comes out with us. She still teaches, still goes diving. But any chance that she can get to go into the water, she's going. So, from the 70s until now, she's still 100%. Passionate about what she does, and she literally loves it. There's some days, you know, with this COVID stuff, it's been very difficult to get customers over on the weekend, and then, you know, you have lockdown days. So on days where it sort of ruins the weekend, they'll say, okay, well, you can't move around on Sunday, folks aren't going to come over on a Saturday. So as a family, we're like, okay, well, I guess we're going diving even if we have no customers. So customers don't mean that if we have no customers, it doesn't mean that we stop diving. We're going to go anyways. Right. And I really believe that it's that passion and my mom's personality that has really caused the business to grow and thrive over the years and, you know, be a sustainable mom and pop operation, right? It's really a family operation.
And what are your roles, each of you, in running the shop these days?
So I'm the dive master. Yeah, so I take out most of the dives. I am working towards getting my instructor, and I've just been dragging my, you know, everything. But I will eventually get that and take over everything. But at the moment, Jan actually still teaches. She actually still certifies people all the time. We have certifications this week. But yeah, I am the workhorse, basically. I'm down there hauling and moving and doing the running of the op.
Yeah, I think everybody knows that the dive master really translates to dive slave, right? So you're doing all the work. So we've both been there. And as far as my role, I don't actively work every day in the dive center. So as long as there's space for me on the boat and I'm not going to be, you know, kicking customers off the boat, I go and I'll shoot and then I'll help. I'll pick up the rear where I can. If Leanne happens to be traveling or something like that, I will pitch in and then help. But for now, you know, I mean, I sort of have a bunch of things going on. So I'm just sort of backup for the dive center at this point.
So when you guys take people out, what are some of the key dive sites you go to?
One of the most popular ones we have is called Alligator West. There are no alligators, by the way. Let me just lead with that. It's named that because of the peninsula that faces the site. But it's several different coral heads that you'd swim back over. You'd like leapfrog over. But that's also where they've started the coral nursery, the Alligator Head Foundation. So people usually like to see where they're, you know, where we're doing our outplants and where they're growing corals. So that's probably one of our most popular sites. And I'll say in all my years of diving, I saw my first hammerhead shark there the other day. And I was like a kid. I was just like, my eyes were big. I'm looking at it just going, this is the most amazing thing. Of course, you know, so anyways, with Jamaican waters, you never quite know what's going to pop out. You know, it's like, we'll go out and see, you know, just the basic stuff, your grouper, your snappers, you know, little stingrays here. And then all of a sudden, here comes a shark, you know, all of a sudden here comes, you know, something else. But yeah, that's one of our popular sites. And with Jamaica, our deeper reefs are better. Our shallow reefs are very fished out. So some of my favorite sites are going to be 80 plus. And right beside that site is called Alligator Deep. And it's just this long coral head, and it is just full of color. I mean, you name it, it's got sponges, a soft coral, hard coral. There's a turtle that likes to live and hang out there. But you name it, we're going to see it on that reef in terms of color. It's just absolutely spectacular. So yeah, those two are probably some of my favorite dive sites. So there's that one. And then there's also another one that's a lot more shallow, and it's called Fisherman's Stone. But you got to hit it when it's absolutely dead. And I would say it's probably one of our best shallow water reef. Like you're doing a 30-foot dive right there.
When she says dead, she means dead calm with no current.
Dead calm. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. No wind, no current. Thanks, D. But that's also a special place. It's full of fish. I don't know why they haven't found that reef yet. It is inside the sanctuary, but it's just the same thing. It's just full of color. And I don't know if it's because of the current that's going through there, but just a stunning little rock and just teeming with life. And sometimes full of lionfish that I like to clean up.
Yeah. And make some tacos out of.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Doubles.
Oh, yeah.
Lionfish doubles.
Sounds wonderful. So you were mentioning Alligator Head Foundation, and the shop's actually located at on Alligator Head.
Their
site. And tell us a little bit more about that.
So the foundation, it actually started out as a marine lab. And, you know, they were just doing work, you know, figuring out. They started the coral nursery, obviously, before the foundation had even started. And the lady that started it, Francesca Von Thiessen, she has property here, and she's been diving with us for years. My aunt Jan, she certified her when she was a teenager. And then she's seen the progression over time and how badly, you know, it's gotten. And she said, you know, we need to do something about it. And she started the marine lab. And then after a trip to Cabo Pulmo, you guys are probably familiar with Cabo Pulmo, and it's just this huge success story. That's what she's modeled the Alligator Head Foundation, where she wanted to be a partnership with the fishermen and stakeholders and people in the area. So they, you know, a couple years after, they declared a 6-kilometer spread of coastline as a sanctuary. And they developed the foundation to manage the function of, you know, maintaining the wardens and, you know, being a liaison to the community. And then they like to tie in art where they can. So it's really science, conservation, and art. That's what the foundation is based on. So yeah, when they started that, they wanted us to come over and, you know, because it only makes sense to have the divers as a part of this, you know, movement.
Yeah.
And we moved over there, was it been 2 years now, I believe? And it's a wonderful, it's actually a great location to stage your and launch your dives from. They've got a great dock, and it's nice working in partnership with people that want to just progress and further, you know, the efforts in Port Antonio. So yeah, that's the foundation.
It's just three minutes from my house.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Convenience. So yeah. Everything in Port Antonio takes 15 minutes. Short, small town.
Awesome. Well, that sounds really wonderful. And we're going to talk more about that after we take a short break. We'll be right back with more from Leanne and David.
You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or at podchaser.com. Reviews are one of the best ways to help others find the podcast.
This episode of Dive In the Podcast is brought to you by Torpedo Rays Scuba.
You can find them online at torpedorays.com.
They've been teaching Canada how to dive for 25 years and are a proud sponsor of this podcast.
If you're in Atlantic Canada and want to take a course or see the shop, stop in and see us in Dartmouth and check out the huge selection of scuba, apnea, surf gear, and much more.
Dive tours are available for locals and visitors to experience all that our ocean playground has to offer.
TorpedoRays.com has a vast selection of dive gear at unbeatable prices, with free shipping available in Canada and quick shipping throughout North America.
So visit TorpedoRays.com or stop in the shop, and you might even see one of us there.
Welcome back to Dive In the Podcast. We're speaking with Leanne and David Lee, based in Jamaica. Leanne is a paddy dive master and host of the Salty Rum Diaries blog. And David is a free diver and underwater photographer / videographer as well. So before the break, you guys were telling us a bit about the conservation work of AHF. And I was wondering, you know, from that standpoint, would you say that Jamaica as a whole is starting to work more towards protecting its marine spaces in a way that are going to benefit Jamaicans?
Yeah, slowly. The thing with Jamaica is, and I think I'm sure other places, is that you have to form a partnership with the community that you're going to establish your sanctuaries and do your work. Because if you're starting a sanctuary like they did here, you are going to be displacing people's livelihood. You know, we're not telling them to stop fishing, but don't fish within this range. And it's been hard, and not just with our sanctuary, with sanctuaries around Jamaica, but you can definitely see there is a movement happening amongst the people. And I think pushing out all this content and showing people what's going on will help them more. Sadly, you know, Jamaicans still like to eat the parrotfish. It's the struggle is real. It's their favorite thing. And, they're not quick to change. Everything's going to happen very slowly. So one thing at a time, you try and chisel stuff away, you know, and I think awareness, sensitization, that kind of stuff is what it's going to take really. And, and I think showing people what it actually looks like underwater is crucial, because everybody thinks that fish can't done. Like fish is just there endlessly. And it's like, that's not how it works, guys. So David.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely see a change here, or somewhat of an acceptance with local folks as well. Because right now, I think Jamaica has how many fish sanctuaries? Is it 14 or 12? I can't remember.
It's actually 17, depending on how you count it, but 15 to 17, yeah.
So, I mean, this is all pretty new. And then, you know, it's somewhat supported by the government as well. And then a lot of private stakeholders. And, you know, I mean, for like Leah mentioned, for any sanctuary to work, especially here, you really have to have local buy-in. Otherwise, you know, local fishermen would still be in there. And I think it'll be difficult to get everyone to not fish in there, because there's always going to be a small percentage, which is why you have to have the wardens and this kind of thing. But overall, it's the country is definitely understanding. And, you know, this sort of leads back to the whole photography, videography thing, why I decided to invest a huge bag of cash into some underwater equipment. And Nick can probably relate to how expensive this stuff is. I don't know why, but it's very, very expensive. Because back then, you know, I mean, I've been diving since late 70s, and I've also seen the progression where, you know, you have all these different species of fish, and then as you go along, then I went off to university, I came back, and I'm like, oh man, what happened? Where is everything? And now that they've put the sanctuary, and I've been able to dive in there in the last 5 years since they've actively started protecting the reefs here in this 6-kilometer stretch of coastline, and I'm starting to see a huge, huge difference. I mean, Leanne could probably tell you more, because she's hanging out with the marine biologists, as far as, you know, how much percentage biomass increase there is, but there's really a huge amount. So at that point, I said, man, you know, people really need to see this and support it. So I thought, there was really nobody doing any kind of quality underwater content work. So I said, okay, well, let me do that. And then we'll start to generate some content and see if, okay, well, can we get everyone else to fall in love with it? Even if they're not swimming and diving every day like we are, at least they get to see what's there. Because I really believe that if we don't do this, there's some way to put a figure on it to say, well, every month we're losing this much if we don't do anything. And if we can get that in front of folks that they can realize what they have now, to put measures in place to protect what we have and then build on that going forward. But the only way to do that is to show people are very visual. You know, you can have numbers and charts and these kind of things, but, you know, the average Joe is not going to relate to a chart and bar this and whatever. If they can actually see what's there, it'll be really helpful. So that was my deal with the whole photography and videography, why I wanted to push that, to be able to push content out, to get the regular Joe to understand what's happening. And like I said, just fall in love with it like we did.
It's really interesting to hear too. And you know, one of the things that I was listening for to try and see if it came out, and it hasn't, which is quite refreshing in this whole discussion. You guys are doing this passion project that is looking at specifically how you build conservation and interest in conservation within the local groups. But I've not heard you guys reference one of the number one things that people come back to, which is usually like, you know, if we do this thing, it will help build the tourism and the economy in the area. And so now it's a bit of a longer question, I guess, in terms of that. Like, obviously, tourism, from my viewpoint, I think, especially and having seen it occur in Trinidad as well, can be a double-edged sword. And we end up sometimes in a case where the tourist and or the tourist interests largely start to outweigh the benefit to the region and the benefit in particular to the local people there. And so I guess to me, when you guys are describing it, one of the things that I found refreshing was that there was a lack of reference to centering tourism as the driving force versus a main interest in like building understanding within the groups. So I guess to me, coming back, I guess my commentary and question is, in what ways are you seeing that tourist economy impacting Jamaica and Jamaicans? And what is it that drive you guys to focus on it the way that you are versus sort of that traditional capitalist sort of interest of like, let's just find a way to make money through tourism?
I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because now that I think of it, it's not even in the forefront of my thought process at all, as far as, you know, what's going on with tourism, because it's really the conservation efforts and then getting our own people to understand what we have and why we really should protect it. Now, of course, you know, there's always a livelihood of the locals. And when the implementation of the sanctuary was done, you have to get the buy-in. And now if you're telling a fisherman, okay, well, you can't go fish, what is the alternative that you're going to provide to them? Now, it's sort of a long-term solution. So there has to be some short-term, you know, stopgap there to be able to provide them something if you're going to take that away. And through the Alligator Head Foundation, they've been offering positions as wardens or, you know, doing anything be able to help that out. Now, it's not, granted, it's not everybody, but they do the best they can. And the whole idea behind the sanctuary, okay, well, if they close this off, you know, the fish will populate in this area, and then they will end up exiting the sanctuary, which they can fish. And the thing that they've always said to them is, hey, you know, it's actually better to have fish growing, that you can take somebody to show them that fish multiple times. And, you know, okay, well, you can have a fee that you would charge them to either go snorkeling or diving or whatever, boat ride, you can peek at the turtles, than to just kill the thing and then eat it once and then it's done. So as far as tourism, like you mentioned, I mean, it's really, really a double-edged sword, because, like I said, we're in a small town and we don't have these massive hotels and, you know, them just shuffling tourists through like cattle. Which is a huge impact to the environment. I mean, no matter which way you put it, so that always has to be managed. And I'm really hoping that, you know, at least on our side, that if development does come, it's managed development, that it doesn't overwhelm the area. But you do see where, yes, local people need to be provided alternative livelihood, and it's happening. It's just happening slowly. So I'm always about, I would rather make the sacrifice for the environment than to just, you know, fatten up that bottom line there. I mean, sometimes it's difficult to say that, or I should say it's easy to say that if you have some cash in your pocket, right? And then you can cruise through certain areas. But if you're really living day to day, it's really tough. But I believe that the tough times, while they're not over, is slowly getting better. And then local people here are starting to see the benefit of protecting the area. Because I've been to some of these meetings with the fishermen and all that, and then the ones that were really loud and against it and boisterous and that kind of thing, they're now turning around and they're like, oh man, I can't believe it. I'm seeing so many turtles. I go out, I saw this grouper, da 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 da. And so we're getting more people crossed over to the conservation side that will actually help the area.
Yeah, and as an example of that, I recently went on a little tourist raft ride by the Blue Lagoon. And, you know, I'm there chatting with the raft captain. This is not something I normally do. Usually I'm in the water. And I'm just there chatting and I'm saying to him, you know, it's like, man, how is it going? How is business? And he said, you know, Lee, he said, one of the first things people come in and ask him, they want to see turtles. And he said, you know, he had that moment, like, people actually just want to see the wildlife. And, you know, people kill turtles here in Jamaica still. That, you know, that still happens. But they're seeing that, just like David said, they're going to, people are going to want to spend money to actually see the wildlife. Not that anybody tourist would want to kill the turtles or anything, but just an example. It's better to conserve and show people the beauty of what the ocean has to offer than to, you know, take everything out of it and it's gone forever. So, yeah, it is, like I said, people are slowly seeing the benefit. And yeah, I look forward to what it's going to be like in 5-10 years.
So, Leanne, your content today, and we talked a little bit about that earlier, you're featuring a lot of the community work and action that you're involved with. You know, like we see like coastal and beach cleanups and lionfish hunts. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the projects and issues that you're involved with?
Yeah. So I started doing beach cleanups because you just have to. I don't see how you can just walk on a beach and look at all this garbage and just stand by and just enjoy the beach and not do something about it. So between just doing beach cleanups and diving underwater cleanups, I started doing that and, you know, inviting friends and whatnot to get on board. And I wasn't always the one organizing it, you know, I'd jump on. But then when I started my vlog on YouTube, I said, you know what, this is going to be a part of the whole process. You know, you need to sensitize and show people it's okay. You don't have to wait for somebody to start a cleanup for you to do it. You can just bring a bag with you when you go to the beach. Just do your part. If everybody, you know, we have a saying in Jamaica, it's like one coca full basket. If everybody just brought one bag and just picked up a couple of things, it would just be amazing. It would be a great, you know, it would be a huge improvement. So, you know, that's where on my own time, I'll go out and do my own little cleanups here and there, and I'll get my other friends and vloggers to push it on their channels and just show the locals, like, you can do this too. And then how about at the same time, don't litter, you know, maybe not throw that bottle out the window. And, you know, there's a whole other side to it. So, yeah, I mean, the cleanups, it's just necessary. It's not even a thought, like, why am I doing this? It's just somebody has to do it. It would be great if it could be nipped from the source, but, you know, that's a whole other show, right? And then with the lionfish hunting, listen, okay, we're Jamaicans. We love our fish. We love to kill fish. You're going to tell a Jamaican that here's this fish that you can kill at will, get rid of them? I mean, it's like a no-brainer here. This is, where do I sign up? So yeah, shooting the lion, you know, and I remember the first time I saw one, this was early 2000s, I think. No, about mid 2000s. I went back down and I went on a dive. I'd come home from college and I remember diving with Jan, and I come back up and I'm like, that's something I see in like these expensive fish tanks. I'm like, what's that doing here? And from there, it just kind of exploded. But you know, you had a lot of efforts in Jamaica. I think certain places were purchasing lionfish and selling it, you know, retail. But I think that slowed down a little bit. I'm not really hearing too much. And I think one of the reasons, I think we've called the lionfish up to about 60 feet. I think we've done a pretty good job with getting rid of these lionfish. Up to a certain depth. Obviously, they're still there and they're never going to go away, but we're seeing less and less of them, I think, in the shallower waters, at least in the areas that I patrol all the time. Then one of the things I started doing, I linked up with a really, really great person, Weldon Wade, out of Bermuda. And he's got a foundation, Guardians of the Reef, and he's just super cool guy. And, you know, he approached me, he said, hey, would you be interested in doing a lionfish derby? You know, he's like, I put one on the Lionfish Grand Prix. He had his first one in Bermuda last year, November, I think it was. Did I get that right? Mm-hmm. Or December? Anyway, one of those months. And he said, you know, I'd love to do this around the Caribbean. And I'd love for Jamaica to get on board. So I said, all right, what do I need to do? Let's sign me up. And yeah, it really just kind of, I didn't know what I was doing. We didn't know how this was working. But anyway, it was, you know, attached to an app and we got it going. And, you know, we got people participating around the island. And I'm hoping for the next one that we'll have even more, you know, get all the sanctuaries involved and really, you know, ramp up the competition. Because like I said, you're asking a Jamaican to go out and kill fish. It's like, and you're going to get a prize. Like, this is a great thing. So yeah, I'm really happy to be working with Well Done on that project. And I'm hoping to do. COVID has been a very strange time and planning and executing things. But that aside, I hate using that as an excuse, but that really has hindered a lot of things, I think, for everybody. But I hope to get that back on track and have another Lionfish Grand Prix in the very, very near future. So I would say those are the two things that I've been mainly involved in when it comes to conservation.
Pretty cool you mentioned Weldon, because we had him back in episode 39 and he actually mentioned doing a collaboration with you, and that's how we first heard about you guys.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
It's nice to see that work sort of, yeah, like span different countries and different people.
And I think that's how it has to be done. I mean, you have to, like, collaboration is everything. You've got to get everybody on board and spread the word and, you know, any ideas. That's how it is. You just have to spread it that way. So I really appreciate him for reaching out and, you know, taking me on, including Jamaica.
Well, one of the other things you brought up earlier, too, is the coral gardening outside of Alligator Head. Do you take part in that? Or do either of you take part in that directly?
Yeah, David would always.
How's that going?
It's going. So they've had some good spots and some bad spots. Obviously, not everything is going to work out. But so far, they've outplanted, I don't know, a couple thousand pieces of coral. I still have yet to do an update on the last one. And they've chosen another site to do some outplants, which I haven't even seen yet. But their main marine ecologist, Denise Henry, she's the one that works at the foundation. And, you know, there's been other scientists there that have helped along the way in establishing the nursery. And it's a beautiful thing to have that here. And they've also got this crazy advanced wet lab at the foundation. Apparently it's the most advanced one in Jamaica and, so I don't know, somewhere in the region. And she's also doing microfragmenting in the wet lab as well.
Yeah.
This is all, like I said, I'm not a science person, so I'm learning as I go. I just, you know, think everything is really cool how she's working it out and implementing that in our little town.
Yeah, we need to actually lean on them quite often, because I don't know if you guys realize, but I'm down there making photos. I have no idea what I'm making photos of. There's this thing called, it's really pretty, but I have no idea what it's called. Right?
Yeah. So they're adding credibility.
We have people like that in our dive groups. You know, oh, no one knows what this fish is. So a quick tag bomb. Or tag
so-so, exactly.
And Leanne, you're also a 876 volunteer ambassador.
What are you doing that role? Yes. You've done some research. So I work with 876 volunteer is Jamaica's first volunteer promoters. So what that means is that, you know, we're trying to make volunteering go viral. It should be a part of your way of life, really. And it was started by a really beautiful soul, Simone Brown. And she's Jamaican, she lives in Canada, but back and forth. And she just had a calling that she needed to start this. This needed to happen. There's not enough effort in volunteering happening in Jamaica. And she actually wants to build this out to where she's going to set up a website. So if you're coming to Jamaica on vacation, you know, you can hit her up and said, you know, I'm going to be in Montego Bay, in Kingston, wherever. And she'll link you to some kind of effort, volunteer, charity, any kind of work that's going on. And she'll connect. So basically, the whole motto is connecting good hearts to good causes. And so that's what she does. Mm. You want to come down, you want to, you know, we understand you want to come down and drink rum and bun weed. That's great. But if you want to give back a little bit during that time, you can do that as well. So it's a really beautiful thing that she's doing. So I am an 876 volunteer ambassador. So I'm just out there spreading the word. And then, so my focus obviously is the environment, beach cleanups, doing that kind of stuff, you know, you really just need to show up. And I will say this, 876 volunteer is a true non-profit. There is no money. When she started, she didn't want any money to be exchanged anywhere. So she's literally just connecting people to the causes. Registered charity, nonprofit, that's how she works. So yeah, I think it's another great thing that's going on. Again, tying back to social media, that's how you get the workaround. So yeah, that's the work with that particular nonprofit, very nonprofit.
Yeah.
So I just had a follow-up to that. So is there, if there's a tourist that's also a diver, is there something they can do in that role?
If a diver comes in and gives me a heads up, I can absolutely find a project. If there's coral outplanting that needs to be done, I mean, obviously it has to be timing for some of these things because we're doing mangrove outplants, like I said, coral nursery, sensitization with, you know, community kind of stuff. I'm not doing that part, but they will. Or, you know, underwater cleanups. Yeah, I can absolutely organize something. So if they want to, just give me a heads up, give me some dates, and then I can work that into, you know, your schedule, into the schedule.
Nice. Yeah. So if anybody's listening and they're going to Jamaica, they can hit you up. So that's awesome.
Yep, we can organize something.
And you also have a YouTube channel called Salty Rum Diaries. What's the concept behind that?
Yes, so the Salty Rum Diaries, you know, like I said, I wanted to promote our lifestyle because one of the things I think is important if you're going to promote change is to show people how you live. I don't like pushing anybody to do anything. You know, I don't be like, you need to stop doing this. You need to stop. I don't think that's an effective way of changing people. So I started this YouTube channel to just show people this is another way that you can live. This is how you can work with the community. Yeah. This is how you can do your beach clean. You know, just little things. And that's why I started it, really. Obviously, the rum is because I'm a rum drinker, hardcore. So it's also a fun vlog in that way. That was the main reason I started that vlog, is to try and promote change through our lifestyle. And I think as divers, you know, and owning a dive shop, we're in a very unique position to showcase that frequently, you know, so we can go out and we can dip in the water. We're right on the coast, obviously. We don't, all of us live like, you know, 2 minutes away from the shoreline. So,
yeah,
you know, it started from that. And, you know, everything just kind of came together for this project that David and I just came up with. But yeah, that's really what it is. It's conservation, showing people how to, you know, just change. This is, you can do this. You can do conservation. It can be a beautiful thing. It doesn't have to hinder, you know, your lifestyle. If you don't, you know, but that was the reason behind Salty Rum Diaries. So, yeah.
Well, that leads me to ask, David, you guys are both working on Jamaica Below the Surface. Sounds like a road trip around Jamaica, but tell us more.
It was really a thought that came up, or something that I wanted to do since I got my camera, underwater equipment, because, okay, well, we needed to figure out a way to get it out there. I'm not much of a YouTuber, vlogger, that kind of thing. I'll happily put all my footage together and with some background music and just throw it out there. But I'm not going to be sitting there, you know, talking to the camera, that kind of stuff. I'm too shy, right? But the only way to really do this, I can't just keep showing people our sanctuary and still show them how awesome it is, right? We need to show both the good and the bad, what's going on in the island. So, you know, I've actually been helping some of the fish sanctuaries gathering content or, you know, making photos for whatever little, whatever they're doing. And so we've managed to sort of grow a small network with all of the fish sanctuaries around. And I thought, okay, well, the only way to really do this is to go out and start documenting or making photos all around the island. I wanted to produce, you know, like a nice fun thing at the end, which would be somewhat of a photo book or a coffee table book at the end to show what we captured. But the main thing is I'm shooting both photo and video on every single dive, and I've just planned to document every single site that we go to so folks can have an idea. Okay, well, that site is like this area is like this. So I actually just registered the domain. There's nothing there, you know, JamaicaBelowTheSurface.com. So we want to put a map up so folks can actually start following along where we are and then looking at the different videos on each side, photos on each side, and just be able to follow along. So that's the whole idea behind it is, you know, we want to be able to show folks what's below the surface because nobody has really done it before.
And so what's the photo book going to be like? It's going to be a recap of everything?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, Jamaica has 14 parishes, so I was thinking that maybe we'll divide it into parishes. And, you know, mm-hmm. of course, we'll have a little bit of text that will go along with it. But you break it down into parishes and then dive sites, and then we'll be able to, you know, whoever helped us along the way, whether it be the sanctuary, so we'll mention it there as well. I actually know nothing about a book. I just said, hey, I want to do a book, right? And then I'm now reaching out to people like, hey, how did I do a book, right? So that's what's going on. This is all happening very organically, which is why we gave ourselves enough time. So I'm doing all the research and, you know, I have an IT background as well. So I'm building the website and all of that on my own. But yeah, it's one of those things where, I knew that if I didn't mention it publicly, it would probably just linger. But now that I put it out there, it has to happen. Right? So we're gonna have to do this because everybody's expecting us to do it. And we've actually managed to get a lot of really positive feedback from folks, you know, whether they're writing us privately. I know Leanne's been getting quite a few and I have as well. It's like, oh my God, this is so great. How can we help? You know, we want to be a part of it, this kind of thing. Yeah. We have a lot of other vloggers around the island that we plan to bring on board to just, you know, help us to spread the word, because I really believe that the more we can get it covered here on the island, then folks will literally start to see, you know, what areas are doing well, especially with the sanctuaries. Because when just to give you an example, Leanne and I were on a job the other day down in White Rivers, close towards Ocho Rios, and the reef there was really beautiful. I mean, they have good fish life, and we got visited by a wild dolphin. It just kind of came in and like said hey and took off really quickly. But that's not something that you get to see all the time. And I've also been diving outside of sanctuaries, and I mean, it's just like barren. You'll just like swim and swim, and it's just algae covered dead reef for a while. And we need people to see this to understand what's going on.
Everybody just has the picture in their head of everything under the water, if it's Caribbean, is like they see in the movies.
Right.
And, you know, and that's all they think it is. And they have to see both sides of it. That's really great.
Right. So on a quick note, anybody listening to this that knows actually how to publish a book, feel free to reach out to me. I'm just making the photos and the videos, man.
We'll have David's socials in the show notes. Make sure you DM him.
Right,
give him the info.
Right.
You guys had a connection to something that I hold quite dear, and at least in the Paris Ram household family, which would be James Bond. So in the new movie, No Time to Die, which, by the way, my dad was so psyched to see, because we've been watching these since I was a kid growing up till now, that he purchased tickets ahead of time for us to go see it on Sunday. But there's a wicked scene where he comes back from spearfishing, and then he's walking into this like amazing place that everybody would look at and go, wow, I wish I could live there forever. And then he travels into town and he goes to a wicked bar, and there's some great music playing in the background. All of this is tied to Jamaica. Yeah. Right. Like now, but it's also tied to you. So tell us a bit about that.
So, 2 years ago, 2019, the scouts descended on Port Antonio. And I was like, oh, you know, I hear there's a movie coming. And it just so happened to be the Bond film, you know, and it was all hush hush. Mm. And, you know, I was just like, oh, you know, it'd be really awesome to work on that. I wonder if they're going to need any water people. And I got in touch with the Marine coordinator, the local Marine coordinator, and they had already roped in Yadi Diva. So Jaden and Megs were already set to work on it. And I was like, hey, you need somebody from Port Antonio. And in any case, that was already going to be the plan. So they offered me the job as water safety to work on that set. And that was super awesome. So going back to the scenes, when him coming out of the water, and with a fish that was not caught in the sanctuary. I don't even know where they got that fish from. But I was there when all of that was happening. Him coming out of the water, the house that they built was magnificent. I mean, it was everything. And if you've watched it, you saw the scene where he's like the shower, the big rainforest shower and everything. That was really cool to watch them set that up and have it, you know, executed. But yeah, that was quite an experience. My first time working on a movie set, and, you know, it just happened to be a Bond film. So that was, you know, a bit of a cherry on top. But I worked with this company called Marine Crew, and they're, you know, Dan Malone is the marine coordinator for the film for Jamaica. And man, it was just a remarkable group of guys that I worked with. You know, they were just true professionals, really showed. I mean, Jaden, Megs and I are water people. Those guys are like on another level of water people. You know, they know how to do everything. And they were just a gracious group of guys. At anything we didn't know how to do, it was here, come on, we'll show you how to do this. So yeah, working on the Bond set was cool. You know, all the scenes that you saw with the sailboat. Actually, I'm going to post some photos on Lady Godiva tomorrow with Lady Godiva, because they use our boat as the sound boat most of the time. Like always close up to the scene. I was always on a little rib, you know, close to it as water safety in case anybody decides to pitch over, or, you know, moving cast and crew from boat to boat. It was super wicked, man. Super wicked being a part of that whole scene for a couple of months. Definitely a once in a lifetime, crazy, crazy thing to be a part of.
That sounds incredible. And Daniel Craig?
That's pretty wicked.
Daniel Craig was cool. He's hot in person too. No real spoilers. No, he was really sweet. You know, I had to work, you know, with him in the water a couple of times. I won't do any big spoilers for anybody that hasn't seen it. But, you know, any of the real underwater stuff that you saw, they did back in the studio, back in at Pinewood Studios back in. So really, most of the stuff that we did was surface kind of related work, you know. And that scene with the, it cracks me up how much they actually put in the movie versus how much they filmed. Because the scene with the sailboat, man, that was days of shooting. I mean, we were out there in high seas, I'm just watching people get seasick nonstop. And I'm just like, you know, just hauling ours out there every day. And it was just a little clip. It was just like, boom, it was that much. And I was like, well, you know, all right, they got the money, they got the funds for that. But it was really awesome watching it all come together and what they chose, what they deleted. There was another big scene that I can't believe they didn't include it, but it had to do with what was supposed to have been Cuban patrol boats. And they completely deleted that scene. That scene didn't even make it. And that was such a big part of filming. And yeah, I'll include some photos that had the Cuban patrol boats and stuff. But yeah, man, very, very wicked experience. I hope they come back, or some other production company comes back, because that was a crazy, crazy time in Port Antonio. Everybody prospered. Let's just say that. That's
fantastic to hear.
Yeah. Did you like the movie?
Well, I think we'll have to cut this part out, but I'm a Bond guy, and I don't, because I know like my other three co-hosts have not seen the movie yet.
But
let's just say there are a couple of pieces in it where I'm just like, so
that's not happening.
They kind of tried to go back to their roots as like what Bond kind of really was. And there were, you know, there's definitely a couple of points there where you're like, whoa, I didn't expect to see that happen. And I didn't expect to see this happen. But yeah, there's definitely a few points where I think I looked at my dad, and I looked at my wife was with me, and I was just like, well, in Trinidad, we would just kind of be like, you can't do that. You can't do that. No, we're doing that, man. So I'm going to say I quite enjoyed it. But with that caveat of like, you can't do that, boy.
That's not real.
Yeah. I can't wait to watch it.
You got to see this
controversy.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I worked, that's where I'd known Jaden and Megs prior to that, but that's where I bonded with them, was on that set. Yeah. So they were over in Port Antonio a bunch and working side by side. And it was just a barrel of laughs working on set with them every single day. Those guys are amazing. And we just did the first episode or the first shooting of Jamaica Below the Surface, and it was with Yadi Divas. And it was the same thing working with them. It's just, you're going to be laughing in stitches all day long. Those guys are so awesome. And just true professionals. Yeah, great divers.
Yeah, so you're talking about posting all these photos, but where can people find you guys online and where can we see all these photos?
Primarily for me, Instagram. I've not given up, but Facebook is just there. I'll post eventually. But on Instagram, you'll find me Fluxy Nation, obviously Lady Godiva Jamaica as well, and then Salty Rum Diaries. So I've got three names that they can find all my stuff. And then David's got F-Stop Movies.
All right. So I'm on YouTube, Facebook. Everybody's saying Facebook now for old people. I'm still on Facebook, right? So YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram is easy. It's just F-Stop Movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Of course, YouTube for me.
I don't know what all these people are talking about. I am on Facebook and it's not for old people, I think.
Are you on TikTok though, sir?
No.
David, what keeps you diving?
So, you know, I remember you talking about this earlier. It was like the connection with the sea. I'm a bit of a workaholic, Leanne can tell you that. If I take on anything, I sort of obsessively do it. I've been involved in some large business related projects over the last 10, 12 years, and it really had pulled me to some dark places and places that I didn't want to be. It was always childhood memories of being in the ocean and my freediving times and those kind of things. And I really think, I did all these things while I was here in Jamaica. So the fact that I could actually drive to work with the ocean on my right and then home with the ocean on my left, it helped me to get through it. And I've always wanted to get back to that. And then I just quit my 9-to-5 April 30. I gave my notice December 24th of last year, and then I left April 30th. And it's been the absolute best thing ever, spending more time with my kids. But the main thing is that, folks will have stresses in life or whatever it is, but every time I go in the water, whether it's for surfing, diving, free diving, photography, it all goes away. All of the problems that you have, everything, that you could be worrying about, it just goes away. It's just like escaping to another world for me. So not that my life is horrible. It's actually quite good right now. But still, I get into the ocean as much as possible. It's that one place that is magic. I mean, it's really magic for me. And being able to actually go in there and then work with all of the fun new camera tech and then come out and then show folks this is what I just saw. It's amazing. So that's really what keeps pulling me back is, maintaining a certain level of sanity within the dry life. You have to get in and get wet as well.
Wonderful. Leanne, I know we kind of hit on it earlier, but I'll ask the same question to you. What keeps you diving?
What keeps me, obviously to echo a lot of things that David said, but it doesn't matter how, and I know a lot of divers will say this, but no matter what day you're diving, it could be the worst conditions ever. You get in the water and every day is a good dive day. Mm-hmm. You get in there and it's just like, all right, current is strong, sea is rough, but you get in there and it's like meditation. And with free diving, I found that has just increased that further. Because when you go free diving, it's really just you and your breath and the water. And it's just your own limitations, right? And that's what keeps me diving. It's the drive to keep getting better, doing more, learning more. Like I said, I'm going to be going for my instructor soon. I just want to see how far we can make it, how much impact we can do in our country and get more people in the water and getting people to love what we love and appreciate it. So that's what keeps me diving.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, guys, I really, really want to thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been a fun little over an hour. I think we stretched this one to one of the longer interviews, but there was so much great stuff to hear and so many interesting topics to cover. And I just really appreciate having you both on. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you as well. This is fun. And I mean, we never really get to connect like this with dive folks. Usually, you know, we're introducing new people and it's always us providing all the information and all the experiences. But this is nice to share experiences with other folks as well. So I'm actually glad because now I have something to listen to while, you know, you're woodworking or doing whatever. I'm going to be queuing up all of your podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. We got some... get 80 plus episodes in the queue for you. Yep. Just skip the first five.
kind of rough. Yeah, I will second that. Yeah.
Sorting some things. Maybe,
oh, sorry. Now, listen now to the interviews.
Right? You should have mentioned that. All right, guys.
It's like when back to watch the first photos you took, you know, a few years ago, 10 years ago, and you go like, what was I doing?
Exactly. Actually, it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, on my Instagram feed and I started to look even back on your Facebook when you're looking at your images, just go back to the really old ones. And you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I posted that. That's crazy. So you start archiving and deleting things.
Yeah. The Instagram time machine, as Nick refers to it.
Yes, for sure.
So does that mean that, like, basically I came on the show and steered you in the right direction, guys? Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. Yeah? Nick, or Amit joined us at what, episode 10 or 11 or something like that.
Nice.
It's been all uphill since then.
Sure.
It's all smooth sailing. Smooth sailing.
Things just got better.
That's what happens when you bring a trendy on the show, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You put some spice in the podcast.
What are you trying to say, Amit?
I think you're here, my boy.
We're having a truth session here.
Right.
That was a really awesome interview, and I'm super happy Leanne and David Lee were on the podcast. It was totally a lot of fun. And Amit, you're talking about side mount boat diving today.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be a topic that everybody brings up, and it's not a very like welcome place for side mount divers in a lot of parts of the world, which is hopping onto a boat. And I think more or less, if you've been a side mount diver, you always find some level of ridicule that comes our way about like, oh yeah, here we go, side mount divers on a boat, blah, 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 blah. The reason that I wanted to talk about it was specifically that. And more or less, I think this has been covered off. So it's not a thing that I want to belabor the point on. But what I will say is there are several different ways in which you can hop on to or off of a boat in side mount gear. And the biggest thing that you can do in relation to that is prepare yourself to actually do it by practicing these techniques either in open water or, you know, if you're at a pool and you have access to one, that's not a bad way to simulate a boat entry, like, you know, doing giant strides and what have you. So what you could do, the easiest way is to just actually string up your tanks on a hang line on the boat, just like on one of the tag lines, in which case you then just quickly jump off of the boat. Do that again. In which case you just jump off the boat, clip up your tanks while you're in the water, and head on down. However, that can become problematic in certain situations, depending on if you're in like, say, a high current or high swell, rough seas situation. And in those cases, it's beneficial to have practiced some of the traditional entries that we use in backmount scuba diving. So, you know, that being able to do a giant stride entry off the back of the boat and or potentially doing a back roll while wearing the tank is useful. And you can do that by simulating those things at the pool deck. Or if you're really lucky and you have a friend with a boat, of course, do it there. One of the key factors I think to keep in mind when you're doing that is the use of hard clip points and double enders to actually ensure that your tanks are securely positioned on your body and that you're not relying on bungees when you actually jump in or out of the water to keep your tanks where they need to be. Because as we all know, that's a thing that is going to flex. And if you're not very careful about what you're doing, you're going to wear a couple of tanks in the face. And that's going to end your dive probably pretty quickly and or cause significant damage to the boat, which is going to really piss off the boat captain. What I will say is that there are several different folks who have discussed this. You can find it on YouTube on a general search. Probably one of the most comprehensive ones that I've seen was by Tomas Meteor when he's put together his double ender series. But really, it's not that complicated, right? Like, you can turn it into a whole bunch of different things, but it's not that complicated. It's just a matter of thinking it through and considering what is it that I'm going to do and in which steps. And so have a look. We'll put some links on the show notes here. But you guys are both side mount divers, and I can say we just did a night dive on the Saguenay this weekend past, and it was a great dive with a bunch of different folks and mixed group. We had back mount and side mount divers, and I'd like to say that pretty well all the side mount divers were in the water before any of the back mount divers were. So just putting that out there, that while people give us a bad rap, if you are well rehearsed in this process, like anyone would be if they were going to go on to a boat dive and back mount, you can actually be just as proficient, if not sometimes more proficient, than the people jumping in their back mount gear. What do you guys think?
I'm not a huge fan of the strapping on the tanks in the water. I've seen it a few times done now, and it seems that you know, when you have the slightest current, I mean, I think if you're a proficient sidemount diver, it probably goes pretty quickly. But I've seen the lineup at the back of the boat when there's a lot of sidemount divers. I personally think, just for a whole host of reasons, I think you'd be better off putting your entire gear on the boat, and then jumping off. You know, like, you know, it could be a little simple thing, right? You're wearing a weighted harness, right, to counteract maybe the buoyancy of the tanks. When you're wearing a dry suit, that's pretty okay, right? You can, if you're inflated, you might offset that buoyancy. If you're wearing a wetsuit and you're not inflating your wing, you know, you could potentially be negative. That's like a potential there. But I actually think the biggest risk would be to sort of like losing your tank, right? Like, like it's clipped onto the rope, you grab it, or clip it on in the wrong sequence and you drop it, that tank's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you can look at that from a couple of different perspectives too, right? So it's the, what's the accessibility point of the boat? How wide is the ladder? Are you going to be in a position to put both tanks on? And one option that I've used myself for exactly the same reason, Nick, like especially if the water conditions are not so friendly, we'll say, is I'll ensure that I have at least like one tank on. So I'll usually put my left post on, and I'll have that set up in place, and I would have clipped off my right post or my long hose, in which case I just hop in the water. I've got like the ability to inflate my wing so that I have a complete buoyancy situation. And if there is a problem, I'm, of course, breathing off of my single regulator in that situation. So I've got the ability to take a breath if it's like a bit of a longer drop or the seas are a bit swelly when I get in there, and I clip the second tank on as I go.
But my question is, why, what is, like, from your perspective, why would you not just kit up on deck? Why would you do it in the water at all? Because, I mean, the water is such a much more difficult medium to work in, especially if you have a little bit of swell. If you've got a whole bunch of people at the back of the boat trying to line up, right? Like, why not just kit up on deck and just jump right off?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. And so when you look at it, there's a couple of reasons why you wouldn't. The number one being like potentially the space that you may take up while you're doing that. And sometimes if it's a crowded boat, you may not have the ability to put two tanks beside you, depending on where you're sitting down in the water, or on the boat deck itself. So most of those charter boats are designed for single tank back mount use. And so if you consider putting yourself and then two tanks next to you, you're effectively taking up a good amount of space that, say, two back mount divers might take up.
Well, I mean, I would just say to that, you don't need that kind of negativity in your side mount life.
I don't, like, really. I'm with you. And that's why you just have to master all of the different entries in side mount. But yeah, I mean, another reason, though, honestly, and we encountered this today, we encountered this on our night dive with the SAG, is I was completely kitted up and diving with two steel 100s, which are obviously pretty big, heavy steel tanks. And when you have to negotiate a ladder in side mount that way, it can become difficult if you hadn't thought it through and you hadn't practiced this in the past. And so it means that, you know, your entry is not going to look like a traditional giant stride entry, but you can complete a giant stride entry in that case. But you just do have to be aware of your surroundings and kind of spatial abilities, like to get in and out of the water. So to your point, I've done both. Generally speaking, like I'm quite happy or content to do a back roll off of the back of a boat, and as well as a giant stride entry. Just as long as you're prepared and you're clipped off properly to do that, it is definitely easier and it's quicker to get into the water, just like it would be in any other circumstance. But you do have those other options where you can don your tanks ahead of time, or you can don them in the water, or you can do it in pieces and have somebody pass them down. And similarly, coming out of the water, if you've prepared your tanks for exit well, then it should be no big task for you to potentially come up to the boat and either pass a tank up, or as long as they're on their hard clip points, that you just walk up the ladder simply, and then you turn off and you're on the boat and you're just there as quickly as possible. So I think it's one of those ones where I won't say it's the thing that causes side mount divers a lot of grief, but certainly if you're an ill-prepared side mount diver and you hop on a boat, you can give yourself a bad name pretty quick, no matter how proficient you are in the water. If you're just there clunking around and asking everybody on the boat for help to, can you do this thing and can you slap this thing on to me? So I think really getting that sense of confidence in your ability to deal with your entrances and exits on your own is beneficial for everybody, including yourself, in terms of your entrance and exits out of the water.
Yeah, and I mean, just one thing to add, I think even a sideman diver with two tanks, I think there's always a space on the boat to stow away one or two extra tanks. It doesn't necessarily have to take up the space, the bench space next to the diver next to you. There's often space somewhere else or under the bench. So I still think that, like, if you're, like you say, like somebody that's kind of practiced and that you're conscientious about your side mount setup, you can probably fit in a regular boat of all but the most crowded boats. My personal preference is if the boat's too crowded, I probably don't want to dive on it to start with.
Yeah. And well, like you said, that kind of negativity is not what you're after, right?
Right.
I won't belabor any of these points because I think you guys made all the points that I want to talk about. But it's just practice, being ready and being adaptable. And divers like divers who are self-sufficient, like on the surface, and nobody really ever cares about what you're doing underwater unless you're doing really stupid dive stuff. So, a lot of judgment is made on the surface. And I hate to say this because it sounds like high school or something stupid like that, but you just got to be ready and roll with it. And if you need more space, just make sure you're not first in line to get out and let a few divers clear the boat. And then there's, tend to be a lot more space available if you get that second tank attached or something like that. So anyway, just my couple of thoughts there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Amit. That was good stuff and always something to think about. If you have a different way or a way you prepare or a trick or something like that, we'd love to hear about it for side mount diving off of a boat or even back mount diving off of a boat, because you wouldn't touch those funky side mount tanks with a 7-foot pole. I want to hear about it. Let us know. Shoot us a message on our socials at Dive In Pod, on our website, wherever you want to reach out. All right. Well, that does it for today's episode. I want to thank Leanne and David for joining us again. It was super awesome having them on. And look forward to getting our next Jamaican guest on, because they have all been absolutely awesome. I want to thank Nick for doing everything you do on the podcast. Thanks for that.
It's fun as always. And this was truly a fun episode. And I think we might have some other Jamaican guests in the lineup if we play our cards right.
I was foreshadowing, hopefully. April, thank you for everything you do on the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, thanks for having me. It's always fun to come on the pod. And great episode. Another good one in the books.
Yep, definitely. And Amit, thank you, sir. Thanks for everything you do.
That's right. I did it, and I'm not sure what it was, but I was glad I did it. And
you were there.
That's right. I'm very happy to be again back in the Caribbean with some more Caribbean folks, kind of making me homesick. So it was a great episode and a whole lot of fun with these two.
And they brought up doubles, not you.
It was the crickets and the frogs in the background that did it.
Yeah, and I imagine that, right? Yeah, the crickets and the frogs, and the fact that they brought up the doubles. Yeah, that's a good point, Justin. That immediately, I knew they were good people as soon as we started there. I was like, this is going to be great, because if they know, then we're on the right track.
Awesome. All right, well, don't forget you can support this podcast at patreon.com/diveinpod and get some fun rewards for doing so. You can also visit our website, diveinpod.com, for all the links you need for episodes, merch, and so much more. On social media, you can follow me at iDiveOK.
I'm at April Weichert.
I'm at Nicholas Winkler Photography.
Next week, we speak to Ron Waxman, owner of Benthic Scuba in Windsor, Ontario.
This episode of Dive in the Podcast was brought to you by our sponsor, Torpedo Rays Scuba.
Thank you for listening.